It's a great privilege to be with you today and to share in this hour of talking about the Lord and learning about the Lord and also sharing with each other. I don't know if God has favorite times or not, but I would think if he does have favorite times, then this is one of those. When his people gather together and they want to hear from him and talk about him and share together about what he is doing in our lives, I think this is what gives the Lord great glory and glorifies him. Well, in the 1600s, a number of the great spiritual men of the time gathered in England, and they were going to try to coalesce the meaning, all the scriptural meanings, around what is the essence and the purpose of man. So what is the chief end of man? What are we really here for, to be about? And you know, they did an amazing job. They came up with a very short phrase that says, this is what the chief end of man is. And what they said was that the chief end of man is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. So there's a theologian called John Piper who said, I'd just like to change one word in that phrase. He said, it's great, but he said, I'd like to change the word to be this. But the chief end of man is to glorify God by enjoying him, not and enjoying, but by enjoying him forever. And I think we all know what it's like to enjoy God, to enjoy walking with him, to know he's with us, doesn't forsake us, gathers with us. So I really like that, because when I think of that, I know what it's like to enjoy God. And when I'm doing it, then I know I am doing what the chief end of man is, and that is to glorify him, which is what I want to do. Whenever we talk about the deep experiences of life, I think they're privileged times, because those are the times when the things of deepest meaning in our life are affecting us. And even scientists tell us that when we go through these deep emotional times of life, that actually there's chemicals released in the brain that imprint those emotional experiences on our minds so that we don't forget them. So as Ron just talked about Peggy, when Peggy came down the aisle when we got married, that image is on my, it's in my mind. I see that. I know what she looks like. And it doesn't get erased away. I have known Cynthia and Ron for 43 or 44 years. And now it's hard to believe it's been that long. When you look at us, you see how young we look. But actually, it's been that long. And also, in addition, I had the privilege of actually working with Cynthia for some 20 years. And they were really great times. Ron and Cynthia don't know this, but they have influenced my life. And I'm thankful that our paths have crossed. So thank you. Another time I can tell you what that is. And it's good. So first of all, I like this phrase, pray first. So before we begin, I would like to pray. As you already know, Father, we are here to bring glory to your name, to reflect on how you are with us and that you do not forsake us, of how you journey with us through all our experiences and that you somehow you redeem them for good. I don't know how you can do this, but you are amazing at redeeming them and causing good. This is a miracle, and we are the ones that are blessed by it. Today, what we speak about, may it bring glory to you. And if there is anything that is not of you and is not what brings glory to you, Father, wash it from our minds. We don't want this to be remembered. But that which is edifying, Father, which you imprinted on our minds, that we will remember this and be guided by it. And we ask this all in the name of your Son, Jesus, whom we love very much. Amen. Amen. Have you ever wondered why the Bible has so many books? 66 books, over 40 authors. It's probably written over a period of 1,500 plus years. Could God not have done this simpler? Could he not have just dictated to a spiritual man and said, this is what I'm about. I am God. I love you, man. And I just ask that you will fall in love with me and walk with me, and I will show you how to do that in your life. And he could have just made it very simple, but instead, he did it in a different way, and actually he did it by telling stories. And I sort of am thankful for the stories, because inevitably in my life, there aren't many things that come across my pathway that I do not start to think of something in the Bible that relates to what we're talking about. And as we talk about lament today, I'll mention one of those in just a while. The topic, loss, can I dream again, suggests that there was a time that I could dream again. But in this last year, there was a little bit of that thought, can I dream again? Because loss affects us so deeply. You know, for some people, it seems that the life trajectory is like that hockey stick graph. It goes upward to the right. It's sort of just one success after another. If you look at the seven P's of success, of position and possession and pursuits, perfection or performance, and people's opinion and pleasure and power, all those seven P's that we usually start to measure success by, some people, it just seems like they're all there. They're just upward and to the right. But you know what? If you start to talk to people, and sometimes I ask them the question, after I get to know them a little bit, is what are you working through in your life? Well, when I ask the question, then we find out it's not so much about upward and to the right. It's about a series of losses and also dreams as well. And it doesn't seem that God apologizes that there is loss in our life. You know, I used to think earlier in my life, Max Licato makes this illustration or metaphor. He says that at different stages of our life, we have a window frame of what God is like. And I think at a certain stage of my life, this is what I thought God was like, was in this frame. But as I get a little further down the road, I realize, you know, that's maybe not the whole picture. It's a little bit different, that a little bigger than that. In fact, in my earliest frame, I really thought God was here to really take away a lot of those losses in my life or a lot of the hard experiences of my life. He was to make my life easier, okay? Because I was honoring him, I was glorifying him, so isn't that what he does then? He just takes away the hard things in my life. But as I got older, I found out that that's not so. In fact, most of the time, he doesn't take away those losses in my life and those hard things in my life. We find in Romans 5, it says, and we boast in the hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out in our hearts through the Holy Spirit who he has given to us. And one of my journeys of just understanding that window a little better, I fell in love with the Holy Spirit. I realized he's really in it for me. He is forming my life and working my life and forming it into the image of his son, of Jesus. And so that's what I really want. And then in James 1, it says, consider it pure joy. Boy, that's a stretch. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. Remember I said there's stories in the scripture that relate to almost everything we go through in life. And if we had more time, I'd like to visit the story of Joseph in lots of detail, but we won't do that today. But I want to just highlight a couple things out of the journey of Joseph, because it is an amazing story. We also know that when he told his brothers and his father about the dreams that he had, that the sheaves, his sheep, would stand up and all the others' sheaves would bow down to his sheep, that somehow we just know that there is more to this story coming, and it's humility is what's coming, because that's not exactly the way God works. But just think of what Joseph went through. He's 17 years old when his brothers, rather than kill him, they sell him into slavery. He goes to Egypt, to Potiphar's house, to one of Pharaoh's leading leaders. And there, he works there, and things seem to start to go better, though he is now 550 miles away from where he grew up. And he doesn't know if I'll ever see home again. In fact, you would have to think he doesn't think he will. And then we see that there is hope, because it says that the Lord's favor was upon him. And things were very successful in Potiphar's house. But then his wife had other ideas, and we know the story. And so she tried to seduce him. He was thrown into prison. Do you know how long he was in prison? We would think, well, this might be just for a day, and then justice will prevail, and then I'll get out. Well, he was in jail for some 13 years, if you like. And during that time, two other people were thrown into jail, the cupbearer and the chief baker. And they then had a dream, and then they came to Joseph and asked him if he would interpret it. And he says, I do not interpret dreams. But he says, I know God, and God will interpret dreams. So he interprets their dreams, and we know it turned out good for one of them and not so good for the other. And so he tells the cupbearer, when it does turn out good for him, please come and tell them about me when you get back into Pharaoh's court. But of course, the cupbearer, like most of our memories at this time of life, he forgot to tell Pharaoh about him. But Pharaoh has a dream, and then the cupbearer remembers. And again, he's called upon to come and interpret the dream for Pharaoh. And when he does, he tells Pharaoh, I can't interpret dreams, but I know a God who can interpret dreams. So he does. Long story short, we know that he then interprets the dream, and Pharaoh thinks it's wise and puts him in charge of his whole kingdom, actually. So the story is amazing. But do you know how long it was that he was in jail? It was for those 13 years. And before he sees his family, because we know the story later of him seeing his family, it's 22 years. So in that period of time, would he ever lose hope? Ever lose hope that actually things will be redeemed for good? Okay? Well, if you know, if it was me, I do know there would be times in there that I would not have remembered even all the times that God showed up in unusual ways and unusual places. There would be times where he didn't, and I would wonder then, is it really going to happen? Before I go further, today I'm going to talk about my journey of loss. But it is imperative that I say, when I say this, is that we all have loss in our lives. My loss is not bigger than your loss. My loss, some losses are more public than other losses. Okay, some losses are hidden. Some are deep in the soul of people where there's hurt. Maybe there's been abuse. Maybe it's been verbal violence, or maybe it's been physical violence. Whatever it's been, for some it's public and it's out in the open, and lots of people know about it. But for a lot of people, they don't. A lot of people don't know. So mine is not better or bigger than yours. It's not greater. It's just mine. It's just mine. And I'm sort of an expert in my loss, just as you are in your loss. You know what it's like for you. And this loss has humbled me and brought me to tears, but hopefully not today. But I have warned Colin that if this happens, I will recover. So my story. Personally, when I lost my job downtown, and Cynthia was around when that happened, so she knows all about that, I thought sort of this is the end. In fact, just before it happened, I thought, I'm at the sweet spot of my life. I'm 52 years old. Maybe we don't think that's the sweet spot. I think it was a sweet spot of my life. I thought, the organization is doing well. We're doing the right things. And there was great sense of altruistic values being carried forward. And I thought, this is great. And then I realized, oh, some may be retiring in 3-4 years. So this is not actually the beginning. This is actually the end of something. And when I got released, I would say it felt like the end. In fact, a friend of both Cynthia's and mine saw me a couple days later, and she looked at me and she says, is that you? Because you don't look the same. And I didn't feel the same. I felt horrible. But you know, an unprecedented thing would say that God shows up in unexpected ways in unexpected places. I would say he did for me. 3 months before this, a man phoned me up one day and he said, are you sitting down? I had a vision about you. Well, this never happened to me before. The people have visions about me. And so he said, you should be sitting down. I said, well, okay, I'll go sit down. So I sat down, and then he told me what the vision was. And he said, the vision is that you will enter a time of unprecedented freedom in your life. You're not to seek another job. You're to seek after me, God, and you're to seek after your wife. And then he gave me three other things I was supposed to do. I thought, well, that's strange, you know. I love my job. I love my job. I love what I was doing. And we had a software company on the side as well. We'd sold software into about 100 countries around the world. And we had tried to sell it, but we couldn't sell it. Our partner wouldn't buy it. And so it wasn't going to happen. But do you know, in 3 months' time, on the same day, I was out of a job downtown, and I sold a company on the same day. Yes, unprecedented freedom, but it was horrible. It was horrible freedom. But you know that the glory of it took me a matter of a few weeks to realize, oh, but actually, God knew actually about this. He already told me in advance that something like this was going to happen, but I couldn't conceive of it. In 2018, 6 years ago, Peggy and I did some serious testing, including the doctor's famous 30 questions to see if your mental capacity is all in order or not. So I just don't go and take that now because I just don't want to know whether my mental capacity is in order or not. But you know, after a few tests with that, we realized there's something significant going on with Peggy. And then we went to Seniors Health, and after a period of about 8 or 10 hours of significant testing, they said, no further testing will be helpful. No meds have been proven to have long-term effect in what is happening to you. But you can call AHS Home Care, and they may help you. But you are sort of on your own. When that word, that first word of dementia was mentioned to Peggy, it was in the doctor's office. And when the doctor slipped it into the sentence and said that this seems to be indicative of this, you know, it never fazed on Peggy at all. I knew what this was they were talking about. It didn't faze on her. She didn't seem to even recognize it. To her, it was simply, Lauren and I are together. We love each other. We just get through things. It'll be okay, whatever it is. Because she couldn't, even at that point, she had lost the cognitive capacity to actually understand what that word meant and what the journey was that lay ahead. So first of all, I'll highlight a few experiences in the journey of dementia, what my learnings are, and then I really want to concentrate on, can I dream again? Is it possible to dream again? Or has that all been erased? Obviously, dementia progress is relatively slow. It's just little by little. Sometimes they say there's the rapid onset of dementia. And I think Peggy's, they would say, it's the rapid onset, except it still takes a period of time. It's been 6 years. If you want to find out about it, you can look on the Mayo Clinic website, and they'll talk about the 6 stages of dementia, and Peggy has gone through all that. I would say for me, my experience was, first of all, it's pervasive. I don't think there was a day that passed that I did not see her lose something. It's just amazing. She's just a little different the next day. Sometimes it's a word that's lost. Sometimes is remembering something or a picture or seeing herself in a picture. She can't recognize herself in a picture at all now. But it might be in a picture she couldn't recognize people. She would ask who that was. Ultimately, it came to the place where she couldn't pronounce words, certain words. And then she couldn't understand the meaning of them even after she could hear them. So it's pervasive. I have to confess, there was irritation too. How could I get irritated with my wife when she's done nothing wrong? It's not her fault. But you know what? There was times in which when they lose something, you say, can't you remember that? Well, it's the wrong question to ask. But I'd still do it sometimes. And sometimes I was pretty convicted. I would realize sometimes I could hide my irritation, but sometimes I couldn't hide my irritation. And then you're left with the fact, I've just done something wrong. I need to make this right. And so I would ask her, I'm sorry for what I said. I shouldn't have said that. And you know what? She would usually say, well, in fact, it's the only thing I remember her saying. She would just say, no, that's fine. It was okay. It wasn't bad. I would just say, so I don't know what that was. It was God protecting me, but I knew. I knew what I had done. And so I needed to ask forgiveness. So I want to just throw this little sidebar in about forgiveness. I just think it's one of the greatest gifts that God could ever give to us. There's amazing power in forgiveness. Do you realize that when you say something that's not right, maybe kind, that if you just say, I'm sorry for that, and apologize, it is hard to conceive that a matter of a few minutes later or an hour later, that somehow it seems to have just gone away. It's not even remembered. So when I ask Peggy for forgiveness for something, it's not like, well, we're walking on eggshells for the next 24 hours until we start to get our relationship back in order. No, it actually just goes away. So forgiveness is amazing. And if you have a spouse or a partner and you have not asked for forgiveness, you should try it sometime. It'll be amazing how it just erases the problem in ways that you could never imagine. So I recommend it to you. But there were larger losses when she lost most of her emotions, couldn't listen to anything and have feeling about it, when she couldn't sew or quilt, when she couldn't play the piano. She went down to play the piano partway through this, and she started off to play. I was upstairs. I heard her play the first couple bars. I thought, oh, actually, the mechanical part of that is still there. But you know what? It came to the third bar, and then she stopped, and then she fiddled with the piano a little bit. Then it was all quiet. And then a little later, she started to try to play again, and then it was all quiet again. So after about 20 minutes, she came up. She never went back down. Then there was times when she was a danger in the kitchen. There was the loss of the remembrance of past life, of marriage, of didn't know we were married. She still doesn't know we're married. But I tell her this all the time, and she's willing to accept it very graciously. And that she has children, and she can't recognize the pictures of any of them. But you know what? It doesn't stop me from telling her about them. But finally, when bathroom functions couldn't be managed, I was going over the edge, because then I needed to be present all the time, 24 hours a day. And I had always thought, I will just do whatever needs to be done forever. I will never not do this. But it did get to be over the edge. So on April 19th, she went into a care facility, memory care, lockdown memory care. You know what? She was not going to walk out of memory care, because she wouldn't know enough to do that. But it was still the sense that they're protecting them that way. The night before she went in was probably one of the worst nights that she'd ever had, and it was one of the worst nights for me too. But when I took her in the next day to this facility, you know what? I didn't want to see any of the people around there. I just wanted to see her and make sure that she was okay and that she would be cared for. That's what I wanted. And that night, when I drove home to an empty house, it is a feeling unlike anything I could ever have imagined. So to come into an empty house, so I will gain control of my emotions, Colin. So I came into an empty house. The feeling to realize she will never come here again. She will never live here again. I will never hear her voice through the day here again. I'd say it was one of the deep moments of life. It's one of the things I sometimes say is, it's hard to say with words, but it's easier with tears. So you just cry a lot. But you know, the crying feels good. Actually, after you've lamented through the crying, it actually feels better. So I did that, and for many days after I did it. It's also true that everything in the house seemed to have no meaning now, because everything in our house, you look at it, and it's all about what we have done together in some way, whether it's pictures, whether it's something we bought, or whether it's something we planned, or whether we planned the house, which we did. You know, all those things, well, you just see them, you realize, but it's about us together, and now it's not together. And it actually had little or no meaning to me. They say you should never make fast decisions after traumatic experiences in your life. Well, I almost sold the house the next day because somebody came over and said they would like to downsize into my house. And Luckily, they changed their mind the next day. I'd say most of the temporal things of life have meaning within relationship. That's what gives them meaning. It's not the thing. It's not the thing. It's the relationship. I have learned that making decisions together as husband and wife is sometimes very complicated and not always fun. However, I know that making decisions without being able to do it with your spouse is less fun. Less fun. So be thankful for the decisions you get to make, even when they're complicated, and coming to agreement one with another. Early on, Jesus convicted me that it was not right that I only saw Peggy at this care facility, that there were, to think of it, when we were at home, we were pretty well alone all the time, just two people. And here she moves into the care facility, and there's about 35 residents or 36. There's about 40 healthcare aides and nurses that are helping through three shifts a day. And then there's the families of residents that also come as well. Not many of them come that often, but some could come. So you can imagine for her, this is like going into a busy mall, if you like, all the time. So I was convicted. I needed to not just see her, but there was purpose in the rest of these people that were there. And so I decided that I would, I was going to get the names, get to know the names of all these people. So I did. I know the names of all those residents that are there. I know something about their families and where they grew up. I know about the residents themselves, but I know about their families too and things in their life. You know what? It is amazing to be able to hear about these people. They have lived amazing lives. One of them is a clinical psychologist. Her doctor's degree in clinical psychology. She's taught at McGill University all her life. Another one played for the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra. So there's amazing stories in the life of these people. And I just decided I'm going to have meaningful input into their life. And they say with people with dementia that you can talk to them about what you see in them. You can talk about the clothes they're wearing or what you see on their face or whatever. You can talk about that, and they will respond to that. And with some that have some memory of their past, you can talk about the things in their life, and they will respond too. So one of them happens to be a lady who hangs with Peggy all the time. The two just get along. In fact, they'll walk hand in hand, or sometimes they will sit on either side of somebody else who needs help and help that person. I'm thinking, but they can't even communicate together. How in the world are they doing this? Well, I don't need to know. God knows. And I decided I would find out something about her life, so I asked her husband, who comes in every once in a while, and he gave me the names of their children. They have two children. So I texted those two children. I got to meet with them for coffee to find out about their mother. Well, when I found out about their mother, do you know what? She was just like Peggy. She kept house just like Peggy kept house. She cared for her kids just like Peggy cared for her kids. It was an amazing story, highly emotional. So when I got back to the place, then I told this lady, I described, you have two kids. And here's their name. One of them is Leanne, and she has a little daughter who's 5 years old. Her name is Paisley. And she has another son whose name is Isaiah. And I said, you have a son, too. And the son, he's just had a baby, and that baby is now 12 months old, and his name is Caleb. And I said, you know, they told me just about you, of what you're like, and what you were like as a mother. And when I was done, she just began to cry. So though she had forgot almost everything, there were things that could come back to her mind and she could relive again. So in some small way, I made her day better. I made a better day for her, which is what I want to do. It is not easy to communicate the scope and extent of loss and how encompassing it is and how difficult it is to deal with loss. Loss is like a flood that rolls over all the stable facets of life. It seems that all aspects of life going forward have been affected, never to be regained. Nothing returns to the stability it was before. In fact, they say for people that go through trauma in their life, that's the thing they want. I just want to go back to the way it was yesterday before this happened. Whenever there's loss, it's one thing to break your leg and for it to heal. It's quite a different thing for that leg to be amputated, for it never to come back to the way it was before. I didn't think I was fragile. In fact, rarely had I ever thought of myself as being fragile. And if you work around Cynthia and other people there, you just realize you can't be fragile. You have to be strong, because they are. But now, when I see that just one person leaving my life makes everything in my life and surroundings and daily activities uninviting and quite meaningless, I realize life without relationship is no life at all. And life without the divine is no life at all. So it's a great thing that we have the privilege of walking with God in our life. It's not the loss that's the most important. It's what we do with the loss that's the most important. So let me talk about what we do with our loss. In July of the year, so this was April that she went in July of the year, somebody gave me a book. The book was called Grace Disguised. And I know you like the word grace. I love the word grace, too. Grace is undeserved favor. But the book says it's grace disguised. So this doesn't seem like that it's really undeserved favor. Somehow it's disguised. It doesn't look like that. And this man, his name was Gerald Sitzer. He lived in Spokane. Him and his wife, they went out to a... if you ever get a chance to read the book, I highly recommend it. It's a great book, especially if there's loss. I just say a little sidebar here is that I showed it to somebody that hadn't had loss in their life. They read it. It wasn't very moving for them. But if you have loss, it connects with you. So what happened to him was he went with his wife and family out to a First Nations powwow because they were studying First Nations in their homeschooling. And on the way back, they were hit by a drunk driver. And his mother, who was with them, was killed. His wife was killed. His 4-year-old daughter was killed. And he was left with a 2-year-old daughter and then 2 stepchildren that he had that were teenagers. So when I started reading the book, I would just say it was amazing. Every chapter, every paragraph, I would just say, yes, that's exactly what I'm feeling and thinking. And I need to understand this. And so I began to journal. I think journaling is, for me, it's just a lifeline. I get to write in my journal about what I'm feeling and talk to God. I don't know if you're like this, but just praying to God. Sometimes I get partway through and I think, well, did I pray about that already? Or not? I can't remember what I've really said to him or not said to him. But when I write it down, it's like it's imprinted. God knows it. He's heard it. He's seen it. And his word tells me that he hears all our prayers. It says he bends down his ears to hear the prayers of his children. So he knows. So when I get done journaling, it's like, wow, God knows all about it. I can leave it with him. I don't know how he'll answer the prayer, but he says he will answer the prayer. I just don't know when and how. I'll leave it with him. So what did I learn from the book? I really learned from God, not the book. It's what God does in the book, through the book. One day he, when I say whispered in my ear, no, it's actually he put a thought in my mind. And the thought was, many other people have it a lot worse than you. And I thought, God, you could have thought of something better than telling me other people have it a lot worse than me. How is that supposed to encourage me? But you know what? It was amazing. It was amazing because I just realized that's actually very, very true. There's lots of people that suffer immense pain and they have it all the time. There's people that have conflict in their life. I don't have that conflict. There's people that have financial difficulties in their life and I have enough to get by. So I would just say, yes, Lord, you know what? You're right. I'm just too consumed with me and my loss and not able to see others. I learned that heightened emotions don't seem to bother others as much as I hate to show emotion again. But somehow it seems to connect with people when you are vulnerable, though we don't like to be vulnerable, but when we are, it seems to connect with people and people understand. I never thought much about this before, because I never really thought of Peggy not being there in my life, but somehow I feel much more incomplete. In every relational encounter, something is missing. It's just different. You're not there with your spouse in that conversation, so it just feels different. It feels like something is missing, and there is. Every sight of a couple who are walking and talking and holding hands, discussing something or planning a vacation, I just say, oh, I like that. I miss that. I miss that. So I would just say, when you're with your spouse today, enjoy that with your spouse. Enjoy the holding of hand or the discussion that takes place. I would say that today there is still both bitter and sweet. I miss reaching my hand across the bed and realizing our togetherness is not there. But I awake each day with a rest in my body and joy to pursue the day's tasks. I miss being able to say together, let's us do this. Or I miss her telling me, I like when you do that, and you're good at it. I miss the encouragement of her. But I also love the exhilaration still of being able to do things that I'm good at doing and making a difference and changing the world in some small way. Tears still come easily, and I long for that pain to be less. However, the sadness is stepped back from the brink. It's not quite the same. I'm not sobbing every day. Somehow I see the hurts and losses of other people much more profoundly and recognize that the world is full of hurting experiences in the people around me. I easily identify and grieve with them. Sometimes, selfishly, I'm jealous of those who continue to live their dreams and have loving relationships. However, I know this is not right. And in the midst of all this, God is showing me the joy of affirmation, of seeing things in other people that I never saw before, maybe too consumed with self, if you like. And I then am now able to affirm things I see in other people. And you know what? I do it with all the health aides that work where Peggy is and with many other people I come in contact with. In fact, at night when I sit down quietly at home, I practice this monkish thing of examining the things that have taken place in the day and start writing to the Lord about, so what has happened today? Where did you show up today? And what did I see today? Well, then I start to see things that I saw in other people. And so I write many times. I've written many notes of affirmation to other people. And inevitably, it's never not happened. They'll all come to me after and say, you know what? Sometimes they're crying when they come. And sometimes they're saying, I put this up on the fridge door at my home. And I told my husband, you have to come over and read this because it is amazing. This is what I'm really like, and this is what I do, and it's valuable what I do. So I would just say that people need affirmation. In fact, many of them just tell me, nobody has ever thanked me before. Because in our success-oriented world, we're more about performing and achieving rather than actually people recognizing really who we are. There's many speakers, this wouldn't be Colin, but many people say at some point, this is about the end. They may even say in conclusion, but you don't really know where they are, if you like. Well, I'm in the last segment, if you like. It happened in October of this year. I went to Toronto and had a knee replacement done. So I'm standing on an artificial knee, if you like, and it's not giving out, so that's really good. When I was there, actually, even after 2 days, I was able to get up and walk without a cane or a walker or anything. So I wanted to go and hear a pastor speak at a church that I had become familiar with. So Karen and I went, my daughter, and we went. But he wasn't there. I really was disappointed. But they had a special speaker come. Her name was Kathleen Wolfe. And she had experienced a massive hemorrhage in her spine and had a stroke and had lost so many of the things in her life that she was able to do. It was amazing, actually. But when her story was very moving, and I realized it moved me, and when I got back home after, back to Calgary, I sat with my journal and I wrote what I was thinking. And this is what I wrote. God or life itself sometimes wounds us so we can have a renewed purpose. And he opens up amazing ways to understand others and serve. In looking back, I think my loss of a job downtown, as well as Peggy's suffering from dementia, has truly been a wounding for me. Hard to explain with words, but easier with tears. In no small way, it stopped my journey down one pathway and is creating another. My own uninterrupted pathway would have been much more self-absorbed, maybe simply more like the world, if this had not been interrupted. In no small way, life defines us, lamenting refines us, and hope redefines us. So we got to get to hope. Broken bodies and broken hearts change our pathways and help us to see into others and journey with them. Isaiah 45:3 says, I will give you hidden treasures, riches stored in hidden places, so that you may know that I am the Lord, the God of Israel, who summons you by his name. I can see that his treasures help me to see deeply into others, and it changes me. I'm thankful for it. We have much greater capacity to do hard things now. He handles our weakness. When we can't, he takes us into the hard things to create the good things of our life. In all of this, we get to dream new dreams. Can I dream again? They are different than what I thought. It is more of God than this world. The story God is writing in my life is the best story. It's not the second best story. That's amazing. When I lost my job downtown, I would just say, it was really good. I love that. But the best story was what came after. I'm very thankful for that. So thank you to my boss who did that. I know now I get to decide how I feel about my stories. Others may tell me about my story, and they may say that you are almost like a widow. But I get to decide about my story in life. It is the story that God is giving to me. I need to persevere into that new story. There is more, much more to be discovered. Thank you, God, for changing the trajectory of my life. So something happened after that, which is pretty amazing. I never set out for this to happen. But what happened after that is that somehow the Holy Spirit came right down next to my depth of my lament in my life. And he started to change my lament to thankfulness. To be thankful. Before, I was lamenting what I had lost with Peggy because she couldn't remember. You know, I can't even say anything about the past and for her to have any identification with it. So I would just say, that's what I was dwelling on. I was dwelling on, I'm feeling sorry for myself, maybe is another way to say it. But actually what the Spirit started to do was to change my thankfulness or my lament to thankfulness. And I began to be thankful that I had 52 years with Peggy. Okay. It was great. We did wonderful things together. And I am very thankful. And somehow he's changed my spirit. I didn't set out to do this. This is not me doing this. It'd be nice if I could say it was, but it's not. It's him doing it in me. He has begun to make life bigger, more able to hear hurt, listen generously, and let the Spirit apply salve to people's hurts and redeem journeys. And he's helped me to have hope again. To see that there is something I need to still do. It's not over. There's important things still to be done. And he's showing me what those things are and that I can make a difference. There have been miracles. She hasn't really regained any memory, but not once has she ever asked to come home. Isn't that amazing? Not once. Even I brought her home 2 days after she'd gone in, and she lost all knowledge of the house altogether, so it was not home for her. So she's never once asked to go home. And I understand with lots of people that go through dealing with dementia, that's a hard thing, because people just want to go home. In fact, I hear it from a lot of the residents that are there. She has generally been happy, delighted to see me, but can't remember if she's seen me earlier today or not. It's okay. I know whether I've been there, whether she does or not. She has used my name once, but she knows my face and my voice. And I have videos when I come that she will hear my voice or see my face in the midst of people, and then she will come. It's very meaningful. And another thing which Ron would appreciate is she remembers the name, the words to all the hymns and songs that she has ever sung in her life. How is this possible? How is it possible? She couldn't play the piano, but she can remember the words. And she not only knows the words, she can sing harmony to those songs too. So how is that possible? I don't know, but it is a great blessing to her and to me too. In fact, when she is singing like that, it seems like she is in the thin space with the Spirit, closer to God Himself. It's amazing. They had an Elvis impersonator come in to sing to all the people in independent living as well as her and all the memory care people. And I wasn't going to go to that. But when I was walking out with her to go out, I take her out every evening. I was walking out where I had to walk through where they were all sitting, and I thought, well, you just can't walk past them when there's this performer there. So I sat down and listened. And actually, he's probably been, I think he said he's won prize for the third best in all of North America. So he was capable of doing what he was doing. But you know what? She knew the words to Elvis Presley's song. And in her home, when she grew up, I don't think they ever listened to Elvis Presley. So how in the world does she know all that? I don't know. It's a blessing. It's a miracle. I would say that I have met more people in the last 10 months than the previous 10 years of my life. You just are in contact with so many more people, and it's people that God puts in a pathway in front of me. Loss requires that we look elsewhere for what defines us. We need faith that He never leaves us and forsakes us. So just like Joseph, he, over those 22 years, there must have been times it'd been hard, but he still believed in God and trusted Him. And he saw God show up in different places. Peggy keeps slipping away, but I'm deeply committed to wanting to love her well and bring her peace and comfort and a sense of security and being loved. And she knows it. And she feels it. And I know it. And I feel it. So then I say in my notes, so in conclusion, so this is really the last segment. So when things happen, can I dream again? It's not only possible, I think God calls us to this. Like Joseph, keep trusting the God who says He will never leave you or forsake you. Let Him become the redeemer that He promises to do, that He will redeem things and cause good to come out of them. And I don't know how He can do this, but He does this. So He's causing good to come out of this. There's still bitterness with the sweetness. The two coexist together. Keep asking Him to see what He has for you to do and get a picture of the vision He has for you. There is incredible power in the picture of the desired future, of what you still need to be about. And then you will never be bored again. And when I talk to all the people in independent living, it's the most common problem with all of them. They've lost, if you like, any hope of what their life was to be about, because they don't have hope left. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. Yancey and Paul Brann is a surgeon who worked in India and became world famous for dealing with how to deal with leprosy. And him and Yancey, Philip Yancey, I just think he's one of the best authors out there. In fact, whenever I read whatever Yancey writes, I just think, yes, that's the question I want you to answer. That's what I need to know. And he's so good at it. But he writes this: we don't have the amazing eyes of an eagle or the ability to detect sounds and smells like a golden retriever or the power of a lion. And yet, we are not mere mortals, but immortals with life forever in the image of God, with the capacity to love, vision, and worship. You are not ordinary. And whatever stage of life we are at, we still have the amazing opportunity each day to make a difference in the world around us. It doesn't have to be just like yesterday. God will show up. There's incredible hope in dreaming a new dream. And I can say that there's seldom ever a day that passes that God does not show up in some unexpected way or some unexpected place. It's amazing. Thank you, Lord. This just honors you, but it gives me incredible delight. Before Christmas, Peggy's cousin died in Minnesota. So I knew them, so I thought I'll journey down there and encourage them. So I did. It's one of the first times I was away from her. When I got to Winnipeg, I'd rented a car. And looking for the cheapest price, I did get the cheapest price. And when I got there, I found out the car wasn't at the airport. It actually was off-site. So I would have to go off-site to get the rental car. So I thought, you know what? I'm not going to bother with that. I'm just going to go and rent something from a budget or whatever. And then I thought, you know what? No, I promised them that I would come. So I hadn't paid for it, but I'm going to go. I'll go. So I phoned them, and they said, well, just take a taxi. And I think, oh, now I got to take a taxi to actually get over to get your car that I thought was going to be there for me. So anyway, I thought, I'll do this. I'll do it. So I did it. And when I got over to this place, there was just one person there. It was a lady behind the desk. And I've never had this experience in my life before. So in talking with her, I found out, I asked her how long she'd been in Winnipeg. And she says, well, actually not very long, just 5 months I've been here. Well, then the obvious next question is, well, but where were you before that? So I said, where were you before that? So she says, well, actually I was in Iran. In Iran? I says, I thought that it was pretty hard to get out of Iran. She says, yes, it was very hard. I was lucky to get out of Iran. But I went to Tehran, the capital, because I thought I could get out. And so she went and she escaped. I said, well, then do you have family in Winnipeg? She says, no, I don't know anybody in Winnipeg. So you just think of that. It is almost unthinkable to go to a different country, not know anybody. And she knew English, which helped her a lot. And then my next question was, I just said, I don't know much about Iran, but I think that most people in Iran are Muslims. Is that right? They believe in Islam. And she says, yes, that's right. But she says, I am not a Muslim. I thought, oh. Well, if she is speaking that strongly about that, there must be more story behind that. So while she was doing stuff on the screen, I just decided, maybe boldly so, that I wrote on a piece of paper, and this is what I wrote. I wrote, you need to get to know the person of Jesus. Because the essence of life is not found in Islam or in Buddhism or even in the religion of Christianity. It is found in the person of Jesus. You have to get to know Jesus. So when she looked up, then I just told her this. I says, you know, it's a bit bold of me, but I just want to tell you, I think you need to get to know Jesus and find out who he is. And then she says, well, I've met him. I thought, you've met him? How could you meet Jesus? And she says, well, I had a vision. I had a vision of Jesus. She says, I came into a room, and when I opened the door at the far end, at a table, it was a table sometimes like that picture you see of the Lord's Supper, like a U-shaped table where they're all sitting around the table, and Jesus is at the head of the table. And he lifts up his gaze, and he looks at me, and he smiles at me. And then he starts to beckon to me to come. I says, what happened then? And she says, well, then it was the end of the vision. And I says, you know what? It's very, very clear. Jesus wants to get to know you. You need to find Jesus. So I told her a little bit about how she could go about doing that. I told her, you need to get a Bible, and you need to start to look in this place to find out about him. And when I got back to drop off the car, I brought her a gift bag, and I gave her a Bible and a bunch of other materials, but you know what? She wasn't there. However, before I picked up the car, when I picked up the car, she went out with me and walked around the car to observe to see if it was had dents or whatever in it. And at the end of it, she says, you know what? You were meant to be here today. Because she said, if you'd come 15 minutes earlier, she says, my partner was here, and she said, we would never have had this conversation. So does God show up in unexpected places and in unexpected ways? I would say yes.
Yeah.
And he's doing that over and over again. If there was more time, and you think it's been too much time already, but if there was more time, I would, and I won't do this, I would love to talk to you about vision, because I think one of the amazing things that God has given to us is the capacity to vision and cast a picture of the future of what we can become and what we can do in our life. The rest of the kingdom doesn't have it. Animal kingdom doesn't have it. They have instinct, but they don't have the capacity to vision the future like we do, to vision the future. It is an amazing, amazing. Proverbs 29 says that without vision, the people perish. We just lose our way. We go off track. And that's exactly right. But when there's vision and when we ask God for it, he gives us incredible experience ahead. Arthur Brooks, in his book, From Strength to Strength, which you may have read, says, he sums it up in the end, so what's life all about? He says it's about these three things. It's about loving people. It's about using things. Oh, we get that wrong. We start to love things. He says, no, no, you just love people and use things. And then he says, seek the divine. Because he said, there is no life without the divine in your life. So seek the divine and walk with the divine in your life. Sitzer, in his book, he has, I'm really at the end, Colin. At the end of his book, he says, I usually tell people, I rarely give advice because I'm not an expert in other people's losses, just in my own loss and what the Spirit has revealed to me. But I listen more, I emphasize more, and invite the Spirit to come and journey and reveal his ways. The greatest wisdom I have to offer to other people who have loss is my presence, to be with them, okay, to listen to them, to hear them. But it's God who has to speak into their life and show them how to define what the future looks like for them. Because he says, I will never leave you and forsake you. And as a common phrase always says, the best is yet to come.